Formación Pedagógica de Vaughan asegura un ambiente de inmersión cuidado y de calidad. Campamentos de Verano Vaughan, 91-133-5832. No lo dejes para el último momento, 91-133-5832.
Para más información sobre cualquiera de nuestros cursos, llámanos al 91-133-5833 y te ayudaremos con lo que necesites. 91-133-5833.
Esta es La Hora Extra con Richard Vaughan.
Good evening and welcome. Yes, welcome to the Extra Hour, Tuesday's edition, Tuesday evening, 10 o'clock at night, on the first Tuesday of the month of May. All right, what shall we do today? Keyboards. Let's talk about keyboards. What are keyboards? Los teclados. Un teclado. What, you mean a computer keyboard, for example? Correct. Yes. Are you fast on the keyboard? Yes, I am. I'm pretty fast. Are you accurate? Are you fast and accurate? Well, I'm fast and maybe 95% accurate, which means 5% of the time you make a mistake, a keyboarding mistake. It depends. If I go too fast, yes. If I don't, no. I learned how to type when I was 14. It was mandatory at school, which I think is very, very good. One semester mandatory, obligatory, as the British say, obligatory, for obligatorium. Mandatory, compulsory, obligatory, or obligatory. And thank God, because it taught me and my classmates how to type fast and how to type the right way. You know, with your hands placed in the right position to be a fast and furious typist. And it has helped me enormously throughout my life to have that ability to move quickly on a typewriter first and then on computer keyboards, etc. So, I think if I were the Minister of Education here in Spain, I would make it mandatory for students maybe at the age of 10, 11, 12, 13, maybe at puberty, age 13, to take one semester of keyboarding. Keyboarding means using the keyboard efficiently and well. So it helps you because you can type or you can enter information into a computer screen at double the speed. And that helps quite often. All right, so, but there's a question here. Will keyboards be necessary in 20 years? Yes, I do believe, yes, keyboards will continue to be necessary. Keyboards have, ever since the advent of the personal computer, ever since el advenimiento, se dice, pero poco aquí, the appearance, but I prefer advent in this case. Ever since the advent of the PC or personal computer, the keyboard has remained a necessary instrument for entering information. Advent, let's see in Spanish. Adviento, dice. La venida de Cristo. Advenimiento de Cristo. La llegada. Desde la llegada del PC, that's the best one. The arrival. Since the advent of the personal computer. And before, keyboards were necessary for computing. Will they be necessary for computing in the future? Probably. In the next 20 years, I think so. Although voice recognition technology is very good now. And you can speak, you see, and the computer will usually understand what you're saying with a British accent, American accent. But you know, sometimes If a person says, Pepa, I wonder, in Pethespada, I wonder if the computer will pick that up correctly. To pick up, recoger, del suelo, recoger el aeropuerto, to pick somebody up, to pick something, but to pick up, if the computer will pick up the information, that means it will recognize it and register it. So voice recognition, I imagine, will continue to improve. But voice recognition has to include a lot of strange ways of speaking. And so it can be frustrating. Sometimes when you make a telephone call and to a call center, and then they say, please state your last name. And I say, Vaughn. And that's no problem. But if it's in Spain, say, diga su apellido. Baugan. Diga su apellido, Vaughan. They don't recognize it. So I give up on that. But in any case, will keyboards be necessary in 20 years? I think so. Because when you extrapolate forward, or when you project forward 20 years, it seems like a long time. Wow, in 20 years, everything will be so different. Fine, maybe. But then look back 20 years. In this case, look back to 2001. How different was everything, or how different is everything today than 20 years ago? Well, 20 years ago we had MySpace. Now we have Facebook. 20 years ago we had emails, no problem. Pretty much everything, very little, has changed. We didn't have Twitter, which I don't use. We didn't have some of the others. WhatsApp, we didn't have that. But we had email, and we had SMS messages. We had telephone messaging. No, I can't remember if we had telephone messaging yet. We didn't have the iPhone, or the equivalent to iPhones. That's perhaps one of the most important things. Cars are basically the same today as 20 years ago. So really, very little has changed in the past 20 years, except iPhones, mobile telephony. Well, no, mobile telephony was very common 20 years ago. It's using your handset or your mobile telephone to do so many more things, with the different apps you can use to pay for car parking and for anything. That we didn't have 20 years ago. But basically, the way we go about doing things, la forma en que hacemos las cosas, la forma en que abordamos el quehacer diario, the way that we go about doing things, I think is basically the same. So in 20 years' time, I don't know, maybe some breakthrough technology will change everything. The breakthrough technology. There have been breakthroughs in history. Certain breakthroughs. The most recent true breakthrough in technology was the development of the internet and making it available to the general public. That's probably the most important breakthrough technology of the past 50 years. Or you can go, well, 50 years? No, the past 30 years. And you go back 50 years, and the breakthrough technology was the development of the personal computer, placing computing power in the hands of individuals, people like you and me, the general public. And that was in the late 1970s. And then the advent of the internet in the early to mid-1990s. And then the next breakthrough was the development of the power, the empowerment of mobile telephony and things. Also in the area of medicine, but we'll get to that another day. Can languages be translated faithfully? It depends, yes. Los idiomas se pueden traducir un idioma a otro de forma fiel. Can languages be translated faithfully? Well, it depends on how you interpret language. It depends on your definition of language. Language is used for simple communication. Can you bring me a glass of water, please? ¿Me puede traer un vaso de agua, por favor? It can be translated faithfully, perfectly faithfully. But there are other things. There are other aspects or other elements of language that cannot, yes, it cannot be translated faithfully. No seas mal pensado. This expression in Spanish can't be translated to English because we don't have we don't have an adjective that even comes close to mal pensado. We don't. Evil-minded, no es mal pensado. Evil-minded es que tienes la mente enferma, de malo, malvado, mente malvada. That's evil-minded. So that doesn't mean mal pensado, it's different. Mal pensado means you just naturally have, think negatively about a situation or about a person. You don't think in a positive way initially. You always think, you know, if a person has a lot of money, well, he must have gained that money illegitimately. No seas mal pensado. And I don't know how to say that in English. Don't. I don't know how to say it. For example, you say, pues, nuestro amigo Manolo se ha hecho muy rico con el negocio en esos últimos 10 años, eh? So, our good friend Manolo has become rich thanks to his business. And you say, well, habrá robado. Huh? And so you say, no seas mal pensado. How do you say that in English? In a normal, efficient way. You can't. You'd say, don't be so negative. All right, no seas tan negativo. Don't be so negative. But that's not exactly the same. Mal pensado means you just think in a negative way. All right, don't be so negative. Yes. Don't adopt the wrong conclusion simply systematically. Don't systematically draw negative conclusions. That maybe would be the closest. But that's forcing the English language, as you say, con calzador. That's forcing it. But in general, the simple communications in languages can be easily and faithfully translated. Estoy sentado delante de un ordenador. I'm sitting in front of a computer. All right, fine. Or a computer screen. Yeah, that's easy to translate, and you can do it faithfully. Poetry, you can't. The power of poetry. Yes, you just simply cannot. La luna vino a la fragua con su polizón de nardos. El niño la mira, mira. El niño la está mirando. That's from Lorca's Romancero Gitano. And so you can't translate that. La luna vino a la fragua. Okay, the moon came to the forge. En su polizón de nardos. In its petticoat made of, I don't remember how to say nardos in English, but polizón is, I mean, polizón con Z, of course, is a stowaway. A polizón. Stowaway. Polizón. Let's see. Stowaway means a person, un pasajero clandestino en un barco. Oh, avión now. Stowaway. A stowaway. But polizón is different. It's a type of clothing. It's interesting because polizón is armazón que se ponían las mujeres bajo la falda para que abultasen los vestidos por detrás. Okay. All right, this is a word, of course, we don't use anymore. And in Spanish, I said a petticoat, but apparently I'm wrong. A bustle. Bustle. And I can't find it. A framework or pad formerly worn under the back of a woman's skirt to support and display the fabric. Wow. So, Lorca talks about su polizón de nardos. That's interesting. And in fact, it's here, polizón de nardos. Yes. Hola. Romance de la Luna, Luna, de Federico. García Lorca. La luna vino a la fragua con su polizón de nardos. El niño la mira, mira. El niño la está mirando. All right. It's a... And somebody says you should translate it as flowing in a starched gown of pine. Oh, my. You can't translate. Most poetry cannot be translated. A bustle of nards. It's tough. So the question is, can languages be translated faithfully? In the routine language, yes. For routine meanings and routine conveyance of information, yes. But when you want to become more colorful or more expressive, you often run into difficulties in faithfully translating from one language to another. In Italian, there's an expression called traditore, traidore, or something like that. Traditore, traditore, traditore. All right. let's see if I can find a good... Just to say, let me find a good... traditore, traditore. È un'espressione italiana che significa traduttore, traidor. Translator, traitor. it's true sometimes. Well, it depends. If the translator is bad, be careful. If that person is translating a novel, occasionally when I'm reading a translated novel or essay from English to Spanish, and I in a paragraph said, no, he misunderstood this. And then I try to find the original, and yes, the translator misunderstood something. You see, you can easily, that's one of the problems of being a good translator. Only the best translators can truly understand the original perfectly. Understand it and feel the original perfectly. There aren't many translators who can truly understand the original perfectly. And then, of course, lay it out, plasmarlo, in good prose in the destination language in order to equal the original. And who knows, maybe even improve the original. Jorge Luis Borges said that Gregorio Rabassa improved some of his short stories in the English translations. So it's interesting. But translating is, it can be frustrating because to understand the original, for example, the Oversight Committee. All right, now the Oversight Committee, Comité de Vigilancia, Oversight. You see, oversight has two meanings, and they're a little bit, almost, not the opposite, but they're very, very different. Oversight means the act of watching over, supervision. Yes, the Oversight Committee means el Comité de Supervisión, o sea, de Vigilancia. All right. But an oversight is also pasar por alto algo, anda, se te escapa, una omisión, error, por descuido. Yeah. It's so you need, you know, you can make a big mistake here, you know. You see, we have the verb to overlook. The verb to overlook is pasar por alto, por despiste, por descuido. Se me pasó por alto. Overlooked that possibility. Yes. Okay. Vaya oversight. What an oversight, my God. So oversight comes from the verb to overlook. Now, to look over means vigilar. Well, to look over is repasar. To look over. And so be careful. This is just one case of nuances in the language, and you can make a big mistake and put your foot deep, you know, meter la pata pero profundamente, and change the meaning of an entire paragraph. Just change it. Sometimes you can say the opposite. So you need to be really careful. You know, the expression used to. I've made about once a year or twice a year, I hear somebody use the expression used to completely wrong. And it's almost the opposite. It's the opposite meaning. If you say, I used to give my wife a kiss before leaving home for work in the morning. All right. I used to give my wife a kiss before leaving home in the morning. You know, hi, darling. Mwah. Have a good day. I'll be back for dinner. So I used to kiss my wife goodbye before leaving home for work in the morning. All right. Now, what's the meaning of that? If I write that and I say to Spanish people, Spanish learners of English, translate that to English. 60% will put suelo besar a mi mujer antes de salir de casa para trabajar por la mañana. And it's completely wrong. I used to just, yo antes besaba a mi mujer. ¿Crees que ya no lo hace? I used to means, ya no lo hace. I used to kiss my wife means, what's the problem now? Have you divorced? Or you no longer want to kiss her? So it's, I usually kiss my wife. Eso sí que suelo besar a mi mujer. I usually kiss my wife goodbye before leaving for work in the morning. Now, I used to. So you need to be extremely careful with language when you're translating, because you can change the meaning completely and you can confuse or completely, or the readers can get just absolutely the opposite idea. So be careful. Should children be taught basic accounting? Yes. Children should be taught, well, children in adolescence. This is something that if I were the minister of of education I would try to implement the teaching of accounting. Teneduría de libros, contabilidad básica. For adolescents, most likely age 10, 13, 14. But the most basic elements, but very necessary elements of account keeping, mantenimiento de cuentas, dinerarias. It's important and it's easy. It's easy. The basic rules of accounting are easy. But not necessarily accounting in the classical sense of accounting. Accounting is based on what we call double entry. O sea, partida doble. La contabilidad por partida doble. Which was developed, many people say, by the Venetians in Venice, no Venecianos. But it was invented before that, in which every event is accounted for in two different ways. But that's not important for now. But what's important is children or adolescents should be mandatory for maybe a one-year course in basic calculation. Calculating. Basic llevanza de cuentas dinerarias. Because then they have a basic idea later of how to control their accounts or how to understand and read their accounts and how to make good use or better use of money, perhaps. That's important to have a good idea of how to account for the income and outgo of money. The income, la entrada y la salida de dinero, en tu bolsillo o en tu cartera o en tu empresa. The income and outgo of money. I find accounting fascinating. I love it. But I was fortunate, I believe. I had a very good accounting professor here in Spain. The first trimester in the ESC, I did the ESC in the 1980s for 2 years. And the first trimester, Ciencia trimestre, no quarter cuando es académico. Quarter cuando es empresarial. En el primer trimestre las ventas han subido, in the first quarter. But when you're speaking in terms of academia, we say the trimester. Pereira, Fernando Pereira was his name. He was a professor of the ESE. And he taught basic accounting, and he taught it very, very well. And it's interesting because he's not an accountant or an economist. He's a civil engineer. He was. He died. It was a long time ago. He was a civil engineer. Ingeniero de caminos. A civil engineer. But he taught accounting. Basic. Very, very basic. Double entry accounting. The journal. The Libro Mayor de Contabilidad. How do you say it? The journal. The ledger. And then the balance sheet, of course, and the income statement. And the statement of changes in the financial position. It was very, very interesting. I'll be right back.
Más información sobre cualquiera de nuestros cursos, llámanos al 91-133-5833 y te ayudaremos con lo que necesites. 91-133-5833.
Remember to follow us on social media to get all the latest information on all our offers and special deals.
¿Tienes niños? Pues, ¿qué mejor forma que aprendan inglés que haciendo lo que más les gusta? En nuestros campamentos de verano en inglés se divertirán participando en un sinfín de variadísimas actividades en un entorno seguro y 100% angloparlante, acompañados en todo momento de monitores Vaughan. Campamentos de verano para niños. No abandones tu inglés.
Las plazas vuelan, así que llama ya al 91-133-5832. 91-133-5832. Sí, dígame.
Ahora tu profesor Vaughan, desde tu casa, la oficina. Tu profesor Vaughan en clases telefónicas. Ahora más fácil y cómodo. Consigue uno de los tres planes de formación en grupovaughan.com/clases telefónicas.
Contact us now for a free level test and get started on your trimestrales right away. Your English adventure awaits. Trimestrales de Vaughan.
Nuestro curso de inglés por videoconferencia es la opción perfecta para perfeccionar tu inglés en poco tiempo y sin perder tiempo en incómodos desplazamientos. 100% online, por videoconferencia, desde cualquier lugar. Grupos de 6 personas como máximo. Horario de mañana o tarde. Prueba de nivel gratuita. ¿Qué más quieres? Nosotros no podemos darte más facilidades. Ahora te toca a ti. Entra en grupovaughan.com e infórmate sobre nuestro curso de inglés por videoconferencia.
Estás escuchando Vaughan Radio. Haz una pausa y disfruta mejorando, aprendiendo con tu curso trimestral por videoconferencia. Con todo el dinamismo e intensidad de una clase Vaughan en una plataforma rápida y de fácil instalación. Por fin llega tu mejor momento del día. Cursos trimestrales por videoconferencia. Haz tu reserva en el 91-133-5833. 91-133-5833. Lo que más miedo da al profesional español es hablar por teléfono en inglés. Por eso Vaughan ha desarrollado las clases telefónicas, en las que trabajarás tanto tu comprensión auditiva como tu fluidez oral con un auténtico crack de la enseñanza. Tú eliges la hora y la temática de cada clase. Flexibilidad absoluta. Calidad Vaughan 100%. Contrata las clases telefónicas de inglés de Vaughan para tu empresa. Llama al 91-133-5831 o entra en grupovaughan.com.
If you haven't made any decision yet about your children or young adolescents concerning summer camps, July and August and early September, we offer summer camps in different places around Spain. We also offer camps in Canada, in other parts of the world. And so look into it now, because the sooner you sign up, the better. The sooner you sign up, because a time always comes in the early spring or the mid-spring in which we're full. Sometimes we're booked up. And some parents get upset, and it's usually because they didn't call in time. They waited too late. They waited too long. So for the summer camps for children or for young adolescents, think about it. Try to make your decision now and to act on it, or to least to call us in Baugan for information about this. Thank you.
Más información en el 911-133-5832 o en grupobaugan.com.
Si tienes alguna duda o necesitas información sobre cualquiera de nuestros cursos, llámanos al 91-133-5833. Repito, 91-133-5833.
La Hora Extra con Richard Baugan.
Hello and welcome back to our second half hour. Okay, today's Tuesday evening, 10:30 at night. It's getting late. It's getting late. You should be getting ready for bed, but stay with me for this half hour and then you can go to bed. Okay, should children be taught basic accounting? Yes and no. At least adolescents, yes. But I think children as well. I think you could start at age 7, 8 years old with just basic calculations of accounts. And that will help them enormously. Next question. What? Do you have more questions for me? Yes. I have a lot more questions. Do some armies still use archers? No. Armies don't use archers anymore. When did armies stop using archers? I don't know. I think they stopped using archers in the 16th century. Maybe the 17th. I would say 16th century. In the 1500s. 16th century. When did armies stop using archers? I don't know. When did armies stop using archers? We'll find out. So I was right, 16th century. The short and obvious answer is that they stopped using archers when they got guns in the 16th century. However, that may not be totally true. Now, in 1415, which was the 15th century, the early 15th century, Henry V of England used an army of archers, basically, to defeat a larger French force at the Battle of Agincourt. Very important battle. All right. But they use what they call the longbows, arqueros, the archers. Yes. When did they stop? I think in the 16th century. By the 16th century, it was becoming, the armies were becoming more dependent on gunpowder. La pólvora, gunpowder. All right. Was Egypt influenced by Greek culture? Early Egypt, no. But later, yes. Especially, well, completely. But that was starting in the 3rd century B.C. or the 4th century B.C. when Alexander the Great invaded Egypt and took control of Egypt. From that point on, Egypt was very highly Hellenized. And in fact, one of the most important cities in the Mediterranean for many, many years was Alexandria, which was a city founded by Alexander the Great on the Mediterranean coast in the mouth of the, very next to the mouth of the Nile River. And from that point on, the Egyptians didn't control the country. It was the Ptolemies. Alexander the Great conquered it, but Alexander died about 7 or 8 years after that. And he died in Babylon. And one of his generals, Ptolemy, became the pharaoh, let's say, of Egypt. And Egypt continued with the Ptolemies up until the suicide of Cleopatra. Cleopatra was the last Ptolemy ruler of Egypt. And she and her lover, Mark Antony, both committed suicide when the Roman armies of Octavian were approaching Alexandria. And so that was the end of the Ptolemy. But that was 300 years. I don't really know how. 320 years? I don't know how long. How long were the Ptolemies? About 290 or 300 years. How long were the Ptolemies in Egypt? The Ptolemies. 300 years. All right. Ptolemy the First, Soter, o sea, Salvador. He founded a Ptolemaic dynasty that was to rule Egypt for nearly 300 years. All right. Yeah. All the male rulers of the dynasty took the name Ptolemy, while princesses and queens preferred the names Cleopatra, Arsinoe, or Berenice. Cleopatra. Yeah, there were several Cleopatras, but it was interesting. Greco-Roman Egypt, El Egipto Greco-Romano, Greco-Roman Egypt, began in 332 BC. That's when Alexander conquered Egypt, and it continued until the Roman and Byzantine, until around the 7th century AD. So yes, Egypt has been under the influence of Greek culture in many moments in its history. So it was influenced, but up to that point, no. Up to that point, up to the year 332 BC, Egypt was Egypt, very Egyptian. And it was not influenced very much by Greek culture. Richard, do you listen to background music while you work? No, I don't. You don't? You don't listen to background music while you work? No, I don't. Why don't you? Why don't I? I don't know. It just doesn't occur to me. I mean, it would be nice. Why not? But occasionally I've had background music while I worked. But that's maybe on 10 occasions in my life that I work with background music. I would do it every day, every hour of the day. If I had a nice stereophonic equipment to provide soft background music. But I would put on classical music. I would put on Bach and Brahms and Beethoven and Chopin and things, the nocturnes, as background music. But in any case, I don't. I don't listen to background music while I work. Richard, have you ever tried rubbing a lamp to see if a genie might appear? Yes, I have. Any time I see a lamp that looks like the typical style of Aladdin's lamp, I rub it to see if a genie might appear. Well, has a genie ever appeared? Not yet. But I need to rub more lamps. But you don't find these types of lamps very often. I mean, if I accidentally come upon a lamp like this, come upon means, si, doy con una lámpara de este, una lámpara mágica de Aladino. Yes, Aladdin's magic lamp. I rub it, lo froto, don't you? Have you ever seen a lamp? I mean, if you go to the Rastro in Madrid, the flea market, there's some shops where you can find items like that. And you can go in and rub every one of them. You never know. A genie might appear. You say un genio, no? However, in English we have a genius and a genie. Now, genius is un genio, una persona con genialidad, o sea, But a genie es un genio que sale de las botellas o de las o de los, las lámparas. It's a genie. Keep the genie in the bottle. Keep the genie in the magic lamp. All right. I dream of genie. I dream of genie. That's a play on words. Qué nostalgia. I dream of genie. There's a song from the 19th century in the United States called I Dream of Genie. Sueño con Genie, que es su nombre, Jean. Sueño con Genie, la que tiene el pelo castaño claro. I dream of Genie with the light brown hair, born like a vapor on the summer air. I see her tripping where the bright streams play, happy as the daisies that dance on her way. All right, I dream of Genie. Now, there's a play on words, because in the 1960s, a television series came out called I Dream of Genie, but the spelling of Genie was different. It was Yo Sueño con la Genio, o la Genia. I don't know the feminine de un genio. Te sale un genio. A genie. And I suppose the feminine is una genia o una genio. I really don't know. Let's see, genie in English. A spirit often appearing in human form that when summoned by a person carries out the wishes of the summoner. I grant you three wishes. In Spanish, you call it genio. All right, genio. El genio de la lámpara. All right, the genie. Keep the genie in the bottle. Keep the genie in the bottle. Now, I Dream of Genie is a story of an astronaut. An astronaut, a member of NASA, who flies into space. And the spacecraft comes down, it doesn't land in the ocean, it lands on the beach. And the astronaut gets out and there's a lamp. And he rubs it and a beautiful, sexy genie comes out. And he calls her Genie. Because it's a play on words, because Genie is also the name of a girl. And it's called I Dream of Genie. And if you Larry Hagman, the Cotterre, in Dallas, played the role. This was before he became so famous with Dallas. I dream of Genie. I dream of Genie. Genie con J. I dream of Genie. And there you can see Barbara Eden. Yes, I was crazy about her when I was 10 years old, 11, 12 years old. I dream of Genie. And she always dressed as a genie. And it was a very popular television program. I think Barbara Eden is still alive. Her name is Barbara. Barbara Eden. Barbara Eden. I think she's still alive. Let's see. She was born in 1931, and she's still alive. She's 89 years old. Yeah. 89. And she was very, very attractive when she was a young actress. I dream of Genie with a light brown hair. Okay, but let's go on, shall we? Let's go on. So, do you listen to background music? Yes. No, I don't. Have you ever tried rubbing a lamp to see if a genie might appear? Can put a theater? Por casualidad? That if a genie might appear? Yes, every time I see a lamp that looks like Aladdin's lamp, I rub it just in case. You never know. So it's like kissing frogs. You never know when you will find a prince. Were the Russians the first to launch an object successfully into space? Yes, they were. The Russians were the first to successfully launch an object into space. It was called Sputnik. 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 And I remember very well. Because my father took me outside to the front yard of my house at night to watch Sputnik crossing the firmament. And Sputnik 1, that was in October 1957. It was launched on October 4th, 1957, by the Soviet Union. It was the first artificial satellite in history. All right. And in 1957, in October, I was five years old. Wow. Yeah. Yes, 1 month later, on November 9th, I turned six. So maybe I was five, almost six, when I was in kindergarten. And that was our first year on Cloverdale Street. And I remember going outside and looking up. And Sputnik was very, very small. To tell you the truth, it was about 1 meter, or even smaller. But you could see it orbiting the Earth. Of course, the orbit was very near the atmosphere, so it wasn't very high up. But you could see it clearly moving across, like a star moving across. So it was interesting. How much did it weigh? 84 kilos. 84 kilos. How many orbits did it complete? It completed 1,440 orbits. Not bad. What was the duration of the mission? 3 months. 3 months. Which means it orbited the Earth quite quickly. In 3 months, there are 90 days, right? 90 days. So if there's 1,440 orbits in 90 days, well, that gives us, let's see, how many orbits per day? 16 times. So Sputnik, wow, that's hard for me to believe. Sputnik orbited the Earth 16 times a day. That means about once every 80 minutes. That's interesting, because 24 hours times 60, 24 times 60, or 24 hours in a day. All right, 60 minutes in an hour. So how many minutes? This is strange. Let's see. This is very, very strange, because there are 1,440 minutes in a day. And Sputnik orbited the Earth 1,440 times. The coincidence is strange. All right. So, it orbited the Earth 16 times a day. So, how many minutes? That's 1,440 divided by 16. Every 90 minutes, an hour and a half. It took Sputnik an hour and a half to go around the Earth, to orbit the Earth. Now, it doesn't surprise me, because I remember watching Sputnik when I was 5 years old on the front yard of our house in Houston. And I remember that it crossed the sky in a question of about 10 minutes or 5 minutes. It was pretty fast. So the baby was moving. It was moving pretty fast. That orbit. Very interesting, Sputnik. And that started the space race, what we call a carrera espacial. That started the space race when NASA, and NASA was created and everything, all because of the launching of Sputnik. So yes, the Russians were the first, the Soviets were the first to launch an object successfully into space. So, hey, did your mother ever tell you to sit still? Probably. I don't remember, but I'm sure she told me to sit still 100 times. State quieto. We say sit still, stand still, sit still, be still. We often use sit and stand in English, these two verbs, where in Spanish you use the verb estar. ¿Qué haces ahí? What are you doing standing there? ¿Qué haces ahí mirándome? What are you doing standing there and looking at me? We use stand and sit a lot in the sense of estar. ¿Qué estás haciendo ahí? What are you doing there? Pues estoy aquí. Well, I'm sitting here. Estoy aquí leyendo un libro. Estoy aquí. Decimos estoy sentado aquí. Añadimos sentado. What are you doing? Me? Well, what does it look like I'm doing? I'm sitting here reading a book. ¿Qué haces? Bueno, ¿qué es lo que parece que hago? Estoy aquí leyendo un libro. What are you doing? What does it look like I'm doing? I'm sitting here reading a book. What are you doing? Well, what does it look like I'm doing? I'm standing here looking out the window. All right, we say standing and sitting often. In fact, usually, in English, we resort to sit and stand together with the verb to be. I'm sitting here. And he was standing looking. Old Dan Tucker was standing and looking, just standing. Estaba ahí mirándome como tonto. He was standing there looking at me like a dummy. He was standing there looking at me. So, did your mother ever tell you to sit still? I'm sure she did many times because I was a restless little boy. And so I'm sure she told me many times, te quédate ahí sentado quieto. Sit still. Sit still. Can I tell you? Can I tell who you are by reading your signature? No, I don't think so. You can't tell who I am by reading my signature. Let me see. I'm going to sign something right now. Let's see, just a second. My signature in Spanish, you know, I mean, if you know that if you have a series of signatures, and you say, well, which signature do you think is Richard Vaughn? Then yes, I think you can recognize it very, very quickly. But just showing anybody, I mean, people who know who I am, but you show them in an isolated way my signature, they can't. No caen. They wouldn't be able to tell. But my signature is a signature between the American style and the European style, or the Spanish style. In the English-speaking world, we often say, sign your name. And you can easily, usually, you can read the person's name in their signature. My father's name, Thomas D. Vaughn. It was very easy to read Thomas, letra D, and then Vaughn. And my mother's also Mary Jo Vaughn. It was very easy. But for me, when I came to Spain and I noticed that everybody signed, they didn't sign their name. They put their signature. And a signature is some very symbolic sometimes. And it's impossible to understand who that person is reading their signature. So I developed a semi-American and semi-Spanish signature. You can read my last name in my signature. And you can read my first initial, R, in the signature. All right. Are marriages among Hollywood actors usually more stable than other marriages? Hey, that's a good question. Could you repeat the question for the listening audience? Yes. Are marriages among Hollywood actors usually more stable than other marriages? No. Marriages among Hollywood actors are usually quite unstable. Now, other marriages nowadays are also unstable. The institution of marriage is in a crisis because there are many, many divorces. Yes. I don't know what the percentage is today in the U.S. or in Spain or in Europe or wherever. What percentage of marriages end in divorce? Okay, I don't know. 50%. Yes. However, about 40 to 50% of married couples in the United States divorce. Se dice de entre 40 y 50%. Yeah, 40 to 50% of married couples in the United States divorce. The divorce rate for subsequent marriages is higher. It's pretty high. That's very, very high. That's very, very high. Hmm. Marriage and divorce are both common experiences. In Western cultures, more than 90% of people marry by the age of 50. Huh? Healthy marriages are good for couples, mental and physical health. They are also good for children. Growing up in a happy home protects children from mental, physical, educational, and social problems. However, about 40 to 50% of married couples in the United States divorce. It's a problem, marriage. But I don't have time to pursue this subject. I don't have time to pursue this subject because I need to take a break. Well, no, I need to say goodbye. It's 11 o'clock. Hey, have a great evening. See you tomorrow.
¿Alguna duda o necesitas información sobre cualquiera de nuestros cursos? Llámanos al 91-133-5833. Repito, 91-133-5833.
Okay, now, tell me you want to do 10 more push-ups.
I want to do 10 more push-ups.
Very good. Ask me if I'll tell you to do 10 more.
Will you tell me to do 10 more?
No, I'm going to tell you to do 20.